Support for Fresno Land comes from the San Joaquin Valley Housing Collaborative, hosting a 2-day summit September 10th and 11th in downtown Fresno. Featuring keynote speaker Dr. Manuel Pastor, the summit will unite community organizations, developers, and residents to discuss affordable housing solutions. Learn more and register at sjvhc.org.
Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. On today's episode of Fresnolandia, we have Fresnoland reporters Juliana Morano and Pablo Orihuela to talk about some of the latest mini dramas and happening that we've been reporting on at Fresno City Hall and the County Hall of Records over the last week. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me too.
So today we're going to cover a couple of different topics that both of you have reported on over the past few weeks and a little bit of reporting I've done too. And today is an interesting episode in part because if you've ever watched the show Parks and Recreation that aired, what, a decade ago?
I think it's approaching 15 years.
We're old.
Let's not talk about that out loud.
One of the joys of being a local reporter is you get to see lots of the quirky things that happen in local government.
We live in Pawnee. Let's be
real.
We live in Pawnee.
So a lot of the issues that Juliana and Pablo are going to talk about are very, at least to me, reminiscent of different episodes of Parks and Rec. So anyways, enjoy, audience. So we're going to start with Measure C. And Measure C, for people who are not aware, is our transportation sales tax that we have in Fresno County. It's a half cent. It's been on the books since 1986. It is one of the major reasons that we have the 180 freeway, the 168 freeway, even parts of the 41 freeway, really built out a lot of our freeways. And it's a 20-year tax. So first in 1986, and then it was renewed in 2006. And it's expiring at the beginning of next year in 2026. So there's been lots of debates over the future of transportation in Fresno County. Do we want to be a county that continues to be very car-oriented, car-centric, keep building freeways, lots of roads? Do we want to fix our roads? That's a big topic, and everyone wants to talk about fixing our roads. Do we want to build out more public transit?
Do we
want to have a light rail revolution in Fresno? Possibly. And so Measure C is the container where all of those discussions happen. And so, Juliana, you've been reporting on this steering committee that was formed how many people are on the steering committee?
It's now supposed to be 38. I think there's one vacancy, but 38 members, so very large.
That is a
group.
Large steering committee.
That is incredible. How do you get things done in a committee that size?
They're still trying that, figuring that out themselves.
The members have been nominated by the mayors and councils across the county?
Yeah, there are. All the cities get nominees, some more than others. The city of Fresno has three as the largest city within the county. Different organizations and interests, like Tree Fresno has a member and an alternate. And that one's interesting because that person had to step back this past week because of a microdrama we will talk about. But then one of the big turns in this process so far was when this committee actually grew and gained 12 members recently. From a local group of nonprofits, like a coalition that was strongly lobbying to have a bigger voice or seat at the table in these conversations. So that was part of how it grew to be 38 people. It wasn't always that large.
Why did they want a bigger voice? What was the interest they were pursuing?
So in 2022, and maybe Donnie can talk more about this too, that was the last time the county tried to get Measure C renewed, but it failed. And there were various reasons, but one group that sort of, or there was like a coalition of groups that opposed the renewal plan that came out in 2022. That included some members of this coalition that now has actual seats on the steering committee, because this part of the critique that time was that this process really didn't get enough community input. And that's what the institutions here have admitted that Coalition is just better at. They've had thousands of people turn out to their community meetings, whereas the Fresno Council of Governments led ones like had cumulatively it added up like more like dozens of people at individual sessions. But yeah, that they were the group that lobbied to have a bigger say in things and succeeded.
Yeah. So this coalition, the Transportation for All Coalition, it's a coalition of a lot of social justice, transportation, equity focused groups that have, and some of them have had a long history of pushing back on our regional transportation authorities for a lack of investment in rural communities and disadvantaged communities, in transit, in biking and walking infrastructure. So a lot of their issue with the last measure was around community process, but they also, they're not new to the chat when it comes to transportation policy. These are groups that have been locking horns and also working sometimes collaboratively with our transportation authority for a really long time.
So is this kind of main divide in rural versus urban within the committee?
Yeah, there's a couple of themes. Sorry, Juliana, and I'll let you jump in more in a sec. There's a couple of themes that create tension in both the committee, but more broadly in the debate. There's rural urban, which is urban is like Fresno and to a lesser extent Clovis, and then rural is everywhere else. Yeah, so our transportation board, which is called the Fresno Council of Governments or Fresno COG, it has a weird structure because there are 15 incorporated cities in Fresno County, and so each one of those cities has a representative on this voting body, this policy board, and as well as the county. The county gets a representative as well. And so you have this situation where there's a lot more power vested in places that have far less population.
Got it. So it's the Senate. Okay. So
basically,
Juliana, talk to us a little bit about the process and what they're trying to decide right now.
Sure. And the process has been at the heart of some of the most recent drama, because there still is, the clock is ticking, but it's the road to November 2026, so really we're like over a year out from when this would go on the ballot. But this summer, part of what was also decided when they added 12 people to the steering committee was that they also agreed to an accelerated condensed timeline to come up with an expenditure plan of what money should be spent where for transportation regionally. And so what that's resulted in is, I believe it's been at least 2 steering committee meetings a month starting in July, when before it was supposed to be 1 a month. And most recently, this past meeting, and there was a microdrama that I'll discuss with a switch up in who's leading those meetings, but they were supposed to start talking about just like the basic buckets that money will go into in different proportions. They weren't talking about the proportions yet, but what should those buckets even be? Local roads, active transportation, categories like that. And that was a very lengthy debate on its own. And they're anticipating an even more lengthy, or even lengthier debate at the second steering committee meeting later this month to talk about the actual percentages, because that should go toward each category. And that was a huge debate, like Donnie said, pretty much for the history of Measure C.
Yeah, including, it's always about the categories and what percentage is dedicated to the categories. I think in one of the 2022 breakages was around the share of public transit in the overall measure got less of a percentage than it did in the previous measure. Safe routes to school, which is like Safe routes to school, which is walking and biking infrastructure next to schools, also got way less money. And so those are the things that people are looking at, like what percentage. But what's tricky is the polling pretty consistently says people want to fix roads. That's not that controversial to say Fresnans don't want potholes. They want good streets.
Car-focused city, potholes is what you think about.
Yeah, and even in not car-focused cities, I think it's a
bicyclists, I run into potholes too, so it's not necessarily cars always, but
it's a universal thing. People want their streets maintained. They want a safe place to walk. They want a safe, if they bike, they want a safe place to bike. But the problem is that we have had such deterioration of our roads over the last few decades that the cost to bring our roads up to an acceptable level of condition is just, it's astronomically expensive. And so the group is going to be in this interesting situation where I don't want to say the wrong number, but so Juliana, please correct me. But one of the staff for Fresno COG was saying that over 60% of the ballot measure would have to just go towards road maintenance if we want to bring our roads up to that level. And this is partially a function of a lot of different things, but a lot of it is they've had studies that have showed that heavy truck usage is a huge contributor to why some of our roads are in poor condition. And we've put a huge emphasis on building new roads without getting the infrastructure to maintain.
Okay, Juliana, that's Dish. Tell me about the drama.
Yes, okay, so the first saga, and Pablo actually reported on this while I was away, which I appreciated, but first there was this saga where one of the city of Fresno's representatives on the steering committee, Brooke Ashton, who used to be a Fresno Unified trustee and is a paving company CEO here, got pretty abruptly kicked off of the steering committee. And the mayor of Parlier, who is the chair of Fresno Council of Government's policy board that Donnie was talking about earlier, that has all the mayors have representatives and all that, she took took credit for that decision and said, attributed it to the fact that he was like, and in Pablo's story, he links to these, Brooke was going on KMJ and writing op-eds for GB Wire and a couple other outlets about, she said, spreading some false information that like the sort of social justice groups that got seats at the steering committee board want, I can't remember what percentage, but an inaccurate percentage of the Measure C funds to go toward buses. And then he was also saying, I always see empty buses, like no one rides the bus. They were taking issue with claims he was making in the media that they said was like sabotaging the process.
This committee is really obsessed and not in a bad way with process. They've seen how disagreements around process and community involvement have fractured everyone in the past. And when you have such a diverse group of people who have really different perspectives, like respect how you get people's opinion, how you express that, like that's really important to keep this coalition together. So I think that was, he crossed the line of decorum.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was, that was how they explained why he was abruptly kicked off. But then the city of Fresno took great issue with that because they already are not totally proportionally represented in terms of population on the committee. They have three members. It's Brooke Ashton, Karen Musan, and Chuck Riojas. So at a council meeting right after that happened, council members and other senior city staff were like, we want our member back. We want like our full representation on this board. And then he got reinstated. So that saga's over, and he was there, or he's been there the past couple of weeks, and the tension has continued, but that's bound to happen anyway.
Yeah, there's always tension in committees, and I think it's good for the city to have lively debate, but if it gets sidelined by personality dynamics when there's so much to do before next year, it seems like there's a problem there.
Yeah, then so they switched facilitators this week.
Yes, yes, more drama. Yeah, so there were two Measure C-related meetings this week, and basically at both of those, it was confirmed that, so the Fresno Council of Governments earlier this year put up requests for people to apply to certain positions or consulting type jobs related to the Measure C renewal process. And one of them was to be a facilitator for the steering committee that is inherently going to be a bunch of disparate viewpoints, and to try to have constructive conversations and come to relative consensus on some things. So the company that got that contract is called DKS Associates, and the consultant from them that had been the facilitator for this group was named Kendall Flint, and she worked on Measure T as well, which was the transportation tax that passed in Madera County in November 24. So she had been working the past couple months, but then they said this week, like, after a, quote, mutual agreement, end quote, between Kendall and Council of Governments, she was resigning from her position. And then the people, or the person that sort of a, like a group of mayors landed on for who could very quickly take over and not have everyone restart the process is Mark Kepler, former director of the Maddie Institute at Fresno State. And then also, awkwardly, he was a steering committee member. He was like a Tree Fresno representative on this 38-person body. So they picked him as like the, as Dyer kept calling him, the, not the starting pitcher, but
the reliever,
closer. Yes,
closer.
The pitcher to come in. And I will say, it's unclear to me, this is something I need to confirm, is he getting paid to do it, or is he just, I don't know, that's unclear. Is he getting the rest of Kendall's contract? I don't know. They were debating how to handle the contract stuff, but regardless, he took over the group.
And Mark is like a veteran in this stuff. He was definitely involved in the 2022 efforts, although he ended up opposing the 2022 measure. He was involved in 2006 pretty extensively. And I think he was even involved before that because there was a failed effort in 2004, maybe. So he's been around the block about a bit.
Wow. There's a lot going on here. Where is this all headed? What's the next kind of milestone that we need to be aware of?
So there is that second steering committee meeting coming up last week of August. I think it's Wednesday, maybe the 27th. And that's where they're going to have their big discussion of proportions of Measure C that should go toward which, like, spending category. So roads, transit, other categories.
Got it.
And well, this is all the sausage making just to create something that will go on the ballot that people will vote on.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But I, as a person who's dabbled a bit in ballot measures, I find it fascinating. I don't know if anyone else does. But
we all do, of course. We're going to pivot from that to parks.
Yeah.
We have a new park with a bland name. Donnie?
So the council this week voted on a new name for the park on Peach Avenue just north of Church. It's now called the Southeast Regional Sports Complex?
The Southeast Fresno Sports Complex.
Oh, okay. Southeast Fresno Sports Complex.
No regional.
Not to be confused with the Southwest Regional Sports Complex.
Correct. Not to be confused.
So if I'm going to meet someone at the park to play catch, what am I going to say? Meet you at the Southeast
Sports Complex.
Southeast Sports Complex.
I was just saying earlier, like, I feel so bad for all the people not from Fresno that are going to soccer tournaments and are like, sports complex, there's two. The name, anyways.
So how do we arrive at this
brand
name?
Yeah, so this is, I wrote a story a couple of months ago about the history of this park because I love a good, like, long history. I'm sorry, I'm a nerd. I'm going to pull you guys into this a little bit. So there's this land on Peach Avenue in Southeast Fresno, just north of Church. For decades, it was like a USDA agriculture research station. And it was like where they tested new varieties of fruits, and it was interesting. And when the city started growing in that direction, that facility moved to Parlier, where it is today still. And so USDA went to the city and said, hey, do you want this for a park or something? And the city was like, yeah, we'll take it. This is like in the early 2000s. And initially, the city under Mayor Autry at the time was like, yes, we're going to build a park there. We're going to do a bond. And then the financial crisis of 2008 hit, and all of that kind of went aside. And so for years during the financial crisis, 2008 to 2013, there really wasn't much movement because the city was broke. They had all these layoffs. They were trying to avoid bankruptcy. But there were some community leaders at that time who knew about the promise to build a park there. And they were like, Southeast Fresno has some of the least amount of park space in our city. We deserve a park. There's lots of kids that live in this area that don't have any soccer fields nearby. Southeast Fresno is a big home of a lot of soccer clubs and kids soccer leagues. We need to build that. So there's this guy, Jose Leon Barraza. He, at the time, was the executive director of the Southeast Fresno Community and Economic Development Corporation. And so he was like the classic gadfly at City Hall, just like in their face, showing up at council meetings like, hey, I know you guys promised USDA that you would build a park, and where's that at? Hey, and he's like writing letters to the federal government. Like, hey, I know the city told you they were going to build a park there, but they haven't done anything, so you should get them in trouble. That was basically what he did. And he organized a rally, and he got, I think this was in 2015, and he got a bunch of kids in like their soccer uniforms to march down to the park. he called out all
it's
the
very
media.
Theatrical.
No, he's definitely got a flair for the theatric, so to speak. And he's like in his 70s, probably.
Yeah, he's not young at all.
I listened to his debate because he ran for right. council seat. And he definitely was the most entertaining person on that stage.
He is a lively person. Yeah, and he was a great City Hall gadfly. So he organizes this rally. And the city the whole time, in full disclosure, I worked at City Hall for part of the time when this is happening. And so I remember working at City Hall and everyone was just like, we don't have the money to build the park. This is a huge, it's 49 acres, which is really big. And at that time, I think the cost estimates to build a park were like into $50, $60 million, which the city was broke. There was not that kind of money. This was pre, oh yeah, let's do a $60 million public safety bond, no big deal. We'll get to that reference later. So
was it pre-Measure P also?
This is pre-Measure P.
Okay.
So anyways, then he convinces the city to let his nonprofit take over the park, which was really hard to do. And he was like, let me raise the money. And that they did some cleanups. They cleaned up the weeds and trash. But anyways, it was problematic. So they finally, Measure P then became a thing. Full disclosure, I worked on Measure P. And so when it finally passed and the courts cleared it and the city started collecting money in 2021, then there was finally potentially a funding stream. It still took a couple of years, but long story short, the funding was set aside for the project and ended up being funded by ARPA, which is totally separate from Measure P. And they broke ground on the park this last year. Okay, so then Jose Leon Barraza ran for city council, lost in the special election earlier this year. And so we have this park that's under construction on Peach, and the city puts out like a poll. What should we name the park? They have all these agriculture themed names because it used to be like a USDA testing site, and everyone
like
chooses
GMO park or
I think Peach Park was the name people decided on. It's correct. On Peach Avenue. That makes logical. I like a logical name. And so the community chooses that, but then it goes to the council, and the council is, okay, but we should wait until the election's finished and then let the new council member decide. So then Brandon Vang gets elected to the council and joins, and he puts out a poll, or not a poll, but like...
A bit of a social media call out. We're taking ideas.
Like in
community.
The comment section?
No, what? It was a post. Okay. It made the grid.
Post social media, okay.
Correct. Yeah.
Google for me. I can't remember.
Gosh, it might have been. But to your point, unlike the last social media post, it wasn't so much a poll as it was a bit of a call out.
Tell us what your ideas are. Yeah. So I'll let Pablo take it from here. What happened after that?
Yeah, sure. So last week, Councilmember Vang, alongside the mayor and some other city leaders, announced that the city had decided that it will name the new 49-acre park on 2155 South Beach Avenue the Southeast Fresno Sports Complex, which is a very broad generic name that admittedly is representative of what it will be. It is, I think, calling it a sports complex for
describes its function.
As gaudy yeah. as it might sound, it will have baseball fields, cricket pitches, soccer turfs that are synthetic and natural grass, exercise stations, playstations, walking trails, a community garden. It'll be a very big park. I would recommend anyone who, they're still building it now, there's nothing there, but if you drive to that site, it is a big plot of land, and it will be, the council president yesterday said it has a chance to be the best park in the city, and I would pretty comfortably agree yeah. with that. And pretty immediately after last week's press conference, a small local coalition of Southeast Fresno residents, led by the SFSATA group, Barraza's old association, said that they thought the name was too generic. They have contended since that groundbreaking in February that the city has tried to take a bit too much credit for the work that people like Jose have done in getting the park built in the first place. And so this coalition that, again, is spearheaded by SFSATA, but also includes people like the Fresno Building Healthy Communities, the Latino Educational Issues Roundtable, some local soccer groups, school groups, local neighboring residents, they believe the park should have been named after Jose Leon Barraza. And they say that he was instrumental in getting the park built in the first place, and that he is an accurate and representative figure for this community. And as a result, the item goes to vote yesterday, the item went to vote at this week's Fresno City Council meeting, and some people showed up ahead of time. And even before that, there were over 100 virtual statements delivered to council for this item, many of them supporting the sports complex title, and some, of course, vouching for Barasa's merit to being the park name. And the council member himself, Vang, who represents this district, also had a bit of a interesting handling of the situation. I think before the vote on Thursday, we had some trouble. We couldn't quite get in contact with his office about learning a bit more about the naming selection process. But at the top of the meeting, so the naming of the park was meant to be approved through a procedural vote, through the consent calendar. It's not really up for discussion. And it wasn't until Councilmember Miguel Arias of the Southwest area of the city pulled the item for discussion to get some questions answered about the naming process. And Councilmember Vang very interestingly asked the city attorney if he had to vote on the item and if he had to take part in a public discussion. He got confirmation that he did not. And it seemed like he was going to abstain from voting on this issue in his district. He eventually did, and he eventually did lead a discussion that went on later on today. But Councilmember Vang, and although the dais deferred to him since it was his district, maintained that the name is not generic, but rather a very open name, an inclusive name.
It's
very accurate, and it doesn't fall into one silo or demographic of people in the Southeast, and it's something that everybody could see themselves in. The city have maintained that there's policy in place to name future facilities in the park after specific people or places or things that are very important to the community. And some council members, while non-committal, said that if a resolution came by in the future to name one of those facilities after Jose, that they'd be very open to it. But for now, through a 6-1 vote, the city christened the new park name Southeast Fresno Sports Complex.
So how much is like the previous special election politics playing into this whole situation in your mind, Donnie?
Yeah, hard to say. I think it's probably less about Jose being a candidate because no offense to him personally, he didn't receive that many votes. Like he wasn't
13%. He was not even second, correct.
Yeah, so he wasn't the main opponent of Brandon Vang. They had a very respectful race, so there wasn't bad blood that we're aware of. It feels, in my mind, more of, I think there's this question of a lot of the groups that were advocating for the park to be named after Jose Leon Barraza, like to highlight the Latino heritage of Southeast Fresno. And Southeast Fresno is the historical center of Fresno's Latino community. And Southeast Fresno is a very diverse place. There's also a lot of Southeast Asian communities that live in Southeast Fresno.
Correct.
A lot of Armenian communities that live especially in Sunnyside. And so I think there is this sense of, sure, it's the center of the Latino community, but there's also a lot of cultures that live here too.
Yeah.
Also, naming something after someone who's alive, still activating,
was always going to be a bit awkward.
So I think there's that. I don't think that he's perceived by a lot of people at City Hall, Jose, as the champion. And I think this always happens whenever there's a big success on some level over who gets the credit. And you get to see this at every single groundbreaking.
Of course. Any affordable housing groundbreaking, every single elected official.
Arguing about who gets to hold the scissors.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've got the time, they'll be there for the photo op.
So this is just like a continuation of the power struggle over who gets to get credit for things.
Well, let's talk about Vang a little bit. It seems like he didn't want to piss anybody off with this particular decision. But that also seems like it got in his own way.
Yes.
Are we seeing this from him early on in his tenure in office?
He's new. I think my read is, he served on the Sanger Unified Board of Trustees prior to serving on the Fresno City Council. Sanger Unified is just a very different body of government. First of all, the media coverage is very different. It's a much smaller area, which is why you don't see Fresno Land coverage on it all the time. But also, I think just as a Fresno City Council member, you are going to piss people off.
Yeah.
There's no way around it.
It's the nature of the job.
Yeah. And some council members have embraced this. Some have found workarounds to that worked for them. But I think he's just learning.
Yeah.
And Vang in particular is in a very interesting situation where he has to run again in a matter of months.
Yes.
In a calendar, he'll run again.
So he could just be slow rolling it until he has a more permanent position.
Sure.
Let's talk about another permanent position, which is a new police headquarters lease.
Yeah.
I saw some interesting online commentary about this. What's going on, Donnie?
What's the online? Oh, maybe I should explain it and then we can talk
about
online commentary.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I jumped into the fray to report a little bit this week. Sometimes items catch my interest and I just can't help myself. So our police department currently their headquarters are on Mariposa Street, just across the street from the courthouse downtown. It's an old building. It's the former City Hall building. It was built in the 40s. It has asbestos. Like, it has lots of problems.
Yeah.
No one's disputing that. They've been wanting to move for a long time or rehabilitate the building. On the agenda for this last Thursday's council meeting, there was a lease put on the agenda. It's a $30 million lease. It's 21 years. The city gets the first year rent free. They still, on top of the $30 million lease, have to put in $12 million of tenant improvements into the building to make it work for the police department. Some of those tenant improvements are very unique to the police department, holding cells, etc. Some of them are basic building infrastructure issues like HVAC. So for me, when I see this, what struck my interest is we normally have more public discussion about these things before we make really big $30 to $50 million decisions.
It's a big investment.
It was on the consent calendar. The owner of the building is Ed Cashin, who is...
He owns a few things.
He is arguably, definitely, indisputably, one of the top three most powerful developers in Fresno history, and has owned the building and upgraded it. There was no competitive bidding process for this building, and the funding to pay the lease has not been identified yet. So all of those things were just like, I just want to look into it. So I talked to some commercial real estate brokers because I don't understand the lease terms. So I just, hey, this is what they're paying. This is how it's structured. What do you think? And the two brokers I talked to were, there are parts of the deal that they're like, this is pretty standard. With government agencies, you see these long leases. That's not weird. The rate is fine, except they're having to pay for all these tenant improvements. So that kind of makes the rate a little bit higher. It's workable, but the bigger thing is it's like a value question. Do you want your governments to be leasing, which is just inherently more expensive, or do you want to push your government to own buildings because it is just inherently cheaper? And it's partially a logistical challenge of like relocating a department, temporarily upgrading, all of that, but that's the bottom line. So they approved it unanimously yesterday. There was a little bit of discussion. They also approved funding for the tenant improvements and a $57 million public safety bond that also gets us a new fire station and a new 911 call center. Both of those projects, by the way, are already under construction. They just needed more money.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've been talking about the call center for a while.
Yeah, no, it's under construction, as is the fire station. And they're like, oh, need more money. Let's go bond. Our job as journalists, we're not necessarily making value judgments, contrary to the opinion of some people who read our stories, but we need to be the people who ask the hard questions when we make these big financial decisions. I lived as an adult in the working world through the financial crisis and saw the city of Fresno nearly hit bankruptcy and stock didn't file for bankruptcy. And so that could happen still. And I think that we just have to be publicly asking these questions and making sure there's debate on it.
It is funny that nowadays providing context has become a value judgment, as if placing things in their logical context is tantamount to criticizing it. But that's the world we're in now.
That is the world we're in now. It's too bad.
Yeah. All right. We're going to conclude with some culture wars, as all good podcasts do. Our new county supervisor, Gary Bredefield, has been tackling some holiday issues over there at the supervisor's office. Pablo, what's he been up to these days?
Yeah, so I would say the story starts in June, right? That's Pride Month. And during the Pride Month parade that happened here in the city, I believe around Olive in the Tower District, some county staffers, particularly from the Department of Public Health, took part in the celebrations. And among that participation was the handing out of items and resources like condoms, lubricants, informational brochures and resources for people participating in the parade. And the supervisor, Gary Bredefield, took issue with that. Very important to note, not in the participation of the department, but rather in the use of taxpayer money going toward these resources and handing them off. If we're up to Gary, and the supervisors made that clear, the debate that happened these last 2 months for some different policies, if they had it their way, the only holidays that official county employees would celebrate are the scheduled paid holidays, which typically line up with the federal holidays here in the country. And so what has been happening throughout really the supervisor's freshman term is a lot of policy to add oversight into the way these departments officially conduct business during holidays or celebrations in the county. The most recent policy that was passed was the supervisor instructing the CAO to canonize which holidays can be officially celebrated by county staff. And like I said, those mostly mirror the federal holidays. So we're looking at things like Juneteenth, New Year's Day, Memorial Day, but anything else that maybe doesn't fit that or maybe isn't really normally a paid holiday, such as Black Maternity Health Week or Pride Month, that is not necessarily a day but a month-long celebration, those will likely now have to go through some sort of approval process by the board. And that follows policies like the one that came the month prior, where now department heads are looking at getting board approval before they spend their own discretionary funds. And there has been some pushback by the local communities here, particularly the LGBTQ community, who feel that this policy is a direct attack on them. While there's nothing in this legislation that specifically names them, the supervisor has been very quick to say, both on the dais and through his own social media channels and media appearances, that he does take issue, admittedly, with the prominence of LGBTQ displays in the county libraries and the spending of taxpayer money going on items like condoms in lieu of being dispersed at the Pride Parade. And so many of the people in the LGBTQ community believe that this is just sort of a official boxing out of county staff appearing at these events.
And then he also wants to add some things. What does he want to add? You take something away, what do you add?
On this Tuesday's agenda, he is introducing a resolution. This is all through his office. This is not through the CAO or through any other county department, but his office is introducing a resolution to have the national motto, or In God We Trust, signage put on the supervisor's chambers. It would be similar to the In God We Trust signage in the council chambers, of which he was also pretty instrumental, if I recall, in getting that sign installed. And if you look on the county website while the documents are still up, you'll see that many cities and counties have already canonized the motto, either in as an adopted official motto for that jurisdiction or in adding that signage in their own government buildings. So it'll be interesting to see if that gets adopted. As I said, this is just part of a very proactive freshman tenure by Supervisor Bedefeld, and getting a lot of his policies and beliefs enacted or at least discussed on the dais every Tuesday at the Board of Supervisors meetings.
Obviously, Gary's riding the wave of Trump's election. He's riding the wave of legislation being passed statewide in Texas, mandating the Ten Commandments being placed in classrooms. It's a lot of signaling. It's a lot of, in my mind, abstaining from more important things that the county needs to work on. A lot of these, there's so much to do, and we're fixated on holidays.
And it's interesting, when he was elected, there's a certain extent of what he's doing now that's quite predictable. He also was led the charge to put In God We Trust at Fresno City Hall when he was a council member. But he also came into office with some attempt to have some bona fides around fiscal stewardship and transparency, criticizing the county's budgeting process and saying that he was going to bring more transparency to that process.
Yeah, this is a simpler task in a lot of ways.
It is much simpler to do culture things than to change fiscal processes.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely. We close these episodes every week with what we're loving this week. We're going to start with Juliana. Juliana, what are you loving this week?
I'm very ready. So there was this band that formed at my college, like around the time I was graduating. They used to be called Kingfisher. They're always going to be called that to me. But they had to change their name because I think there was another band that had the same name. They're now called Racing Mount Pleasant, which is like a very Michigan reference. And anyway, I love them. It's been so cool to see them gain popularity from the very early days. And their sophomore album just came out last night. And I listened to it right away because I get to listen to new albums at 9 p.m. instead of like midnight because I'm in California now. And yeah, it just makes me feel like I'm at home, both homesick for Michigan, but also just comforts me while I'm away from home. So everyone should listen to it. It's self-titled. It's called Racing Mount Pleasant.
Fantastic. I'll give that a listen. Pablo, what about you? What are you loving this week?
Yeah, I'm always looking for a new TV show to binge in the middle of movies and books, and just I've been watching The OC for the very first time.
The OC?
Oh, and man,
how does it hold up?
It's great. I love
really?
It. The soundtrack in every episode soundtrack is killer. Good.
Talk about the bait shop.
There's a stretch in season two where they work at this place called the bait shop. And I'm telling you, every single episode has had a live real band perform in front of these yeah. Newport High School kids. The Killers just performed.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one.
And it's 5-6 minutes of them actually performing in the middle of the show. It is... I feel like I missed the whole pop culture wave of teen dramas. I was just,
absolutely
this is my first one, and man, it is great.
I remember binge watching that in 2003. It was epic.
It's been so long. Okay, so Pablo, then I need your help, because make the case to all the Zoomers listening, because we know there's so many Zoomers that are listening to this podcast. Why should they just drop Outer Banks and jump onto OC? What make the pitch here? Why should they go back and revisit it?
Oh,
start
God.
The Renaissance. Tell us.
Talk about Sandy. Sorry,
Sandy Cohen. Yeah. Honestly, I was thinking about this too. And you've seen the OC too, so you would yeah. agree. Sandy Cohen is one of the very few, in my mind, representations of a very good father figure in sitcoms. Most fathers are very frumpy, dumb, oblivious, abusive, absent.
Negligent,
they're just
like
yeah, just every bad thing or comic relief at best. And here's Sandy, who is a lawyer who's always got a straight shooting moral compass, who is the voice of reason all the time, who in the very first episode adopts a very on the wrong side of the tracks kid, Ryan Atwood, and starts the events of the show. And it is just a very sweet thing. Every episode is about 40 minutes long. There's no veneer of prestige in this. It's all fun and games. Every episode is its own story. It's a simpler time.
Yeah, so and then the way, you know, a lot of us are dressing these, you can go revisit where that came from.
Yes.
Great fashion looks in that show.
Yes.
Great.
Truly.
Donnie, what are you loving this week?
I'm a Swiftie. I think I've outed myself. I'm wearing one of my Swiftie shirts today in honor of The Life of a Showgirl coming out October 3rd, Taylor Swift's 12th album. I know, it was just announced this
week.
What
do we know about it so far? Do we know anything?
We do. It was announced on the New Heights podcast, which is her boyfriend Travis Kelce's podcast. And yes, I did watch a two-hour football podcast.
Oh my God.
With my children.
That is a whole different discussion, but keep going.
Joaquin and I were riveted. And it's the music that she wrote while she was on the Eras tour. And I'm really excited because she's producing it with two Swedish pop producers. And so everyone in the fandom is expecting the most amazing, catchy Swedish pop-inspired music that we've had from Taylor in a long time.
Fantastic. And what did you say the release date was?
October 3rd.
Okay. So you'll be sitting...
And the theme color for the album is Orange Glitter, which is like my favorite.
Okay. You'll just be 1201. You'll just be waiting for that.
Well, as Juliana mentioned, when it's 1201 on the East Coast.
Oh,
9 o'clock, we'll be jamming.
Okay.
Did
All
you
right.
see the tweet of Jack Antonoff with the open to work little
no.
LinkedIn?
I love Jack. Yeah, it's sad for Jack, but he'll come back.
What I'm loving this week, I had dinner with some friends in the neighborhood. He did this beautiful al pastor, and he asked me to make some salsa. And so I made my favorite salsa that I haven't made in a long time. And I've been gnawing on it basically continuously since I've made it. This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.